So he reached the battered buildings that stand upon the site of the ancient abbey of St. Medard, in which the last Merovingian was deposed, and Pepin the Short was crowned in his stead. Beneath these ancient buildings there were great crypts, very useful as dugouts, for the German advance lines weren't more than a couple of hundred yards away. The sturdy French soldier lads were cooking and resting in these shelters, and lying down to sleep among the stone coffins that had held the bones of their Merovingian kings. Fourth, the populations over which Charles Martel and King Pepin ruled were at very different levels of civilization in different districts. To the west and south, the bulk of the people consisted of Latinized and Christian Celts. In the central regions, these rulers had to deal with such more or less Christianized Germans as the Franks and Burgundians and Alemanni. To the northeast were still pagan Frisians and Saxons. To the east were the Bavarians, recently Christianized through the activities of St. Boniface, and to the east of them again, pagan Slavs and Avars. The paganism of the Germans and Slavs was very similar to the primitive religion of the Greeks. It was a manly religion in which temple, priest, and sacrifices played a small part, and its gods were like men, a kind of school prefects of more powerful beings who interfered impulsively and irregularly in human affairs. The Germans had a Jupiter in Odin, a Mars in Thor, a Venus in Freya, and so on. Throughout the 7th and 8th centuries, a steady process of conversion to Christianity went on amidst these German and Slavonic tribes. It'll be interesting to English-speaking readers to note that the most zealous and successful missionaries among the Saxons and Frisians came from England. Christianity was twice planted in the British Isles. It was already there while Britain was a part of the Roman Empire. A martyr, St. Alban, gave his name to the town of St. Albans, and nearly every visitor to Canterbury has also visited little old St. Martin's Church, which was used during the Roman times. From Britain, as we've already said, Christianity spread beyond the imperial boundaries into Ireland. The chief missionary was St. Patrick, and there was a vigorous monastic movement with which are connected the names of St. Columba and the religious settlements of Iona. Then, in the 5th and 6th centuries, came the fierce and pagan English, and they cut off the early Church of Ireland from the main body of Christianity. In the 7th century, Christian missionaries were converting the English, both in the north from Ireland and in the south from Rome. The Rome mission was sent by Pope Gregory the Great just at the close of the 6th century. The story goes that he saw English boys for sale in the Roman slave market, though it's a little difficult to understand how they got there. They were very fair and good-looking. In answer to his inquiries, he was told that they were angels. "Not angels, but angels," said he, "had they but the gospel." The mission worked through the 7th century. Before that century was over, most of the English were Christians. Though Mercia, the central English kingdom, held out stoutly against the priests and for the ancient faith and ways. And there was a swift progress in learning upon the part of these new converts. The monasteries of the kingdom of Northumbria in the north of England became a center of light and learning. Theodore of Tarsus was one of the earliest archbishops of Canterbury, 669 to 690. While Greek was utterly unknown in the west of Europe, it was mastered by some of the pupils of Theodore. The monasteries contained many monks who were excellent scholars. Most famous of all was Bede, known as the Venerable Bede, 673 to 735, a monk of Jarrow on Tyne. He had for his pupils the 600 monks of that monastery, besides the many strangers who came to hear him. He gradually mastered all the learning of his day, and left at his death 45 volumes of his writings, the most important of which are the Ecclesiastical History of the English, and his translation of the Gospel of John into English. His writings were widely known and used throughout Europe. He reckoned all dates from the birth of Christ, and through his works the use of Christian chronology became common in Europe. Owing to the large number of monasteries and monks in Northumbria, that part of England was, for a time, far in advance of the south in civilization. In the 7th and 8th centuries, we find the English missionaries active upon the eastern frontiers of the Frankish kingdom. Chief among these was St. Boniface, 680 to 755, who was born in Crediton in Devonshire, who converted the Frisians, Thuringians, and Hessians, and who was martyred in Holland. Both in England and on the continent, the ascendant rulers seized upon Christianity as a unifying force to cement their conquests. Christianity became a banner for aggressive chiefs, as it did in Uganda, in Africa, in the bloody days before that country was annexed to the British Empire. After Pepin, who died in 768, came two sons, Charles, and another who divided his kingdom. But the brother of Charles died in 771, and Charles then became sole king, 771 to 814, of the growing realm of the Franks. This Charles is known in history as Charles the Great, or Charlemagne. As in the case of Alexander the Great and Julius Caesar, posterity has enormously exaggerated his memory. He made his wars of aggression definitely religious wars. All the world of northwestern Europe, which is now Great Britain, France, Germany, Denmark, and Norway and Sweden, was in the 9th century an arena of bitter conflict between the old faith and the new. Whole nations were converted to Christianity by the sword, just as Islam in Arabia, Central Asia, and Africa had converted whole nations a century or so before. With fire and sword, Charlemagne preached the gospel of the cross to the Saxons, Bohemians, and as far as the Danube into what is now Hungary. He carried the same teaching down the Adriatic coast through what's now Dalmatia, and drove the Muslims back from the Pyrenees as far as Barcelona. Moreover, he it was who sheltered Egbert, an exile from Wessex in England, and assisted him presently to establish himself as king in Wessex in 802. Egbert subdued the Britons in Cornwall, as Charlemagne conquered the Britons of Brittany, and by a series of wars, which he continued after the death of his Frankish patron, made himself at last the first king of all England, in 828. But the attacks of Charlemagne upon the last strongholds of paganism provoked a vigorous reaction on the part of the unconverted. The Christianized English had retained very little of the seamanship that had brought them from the mainland, and the Franks hadn't yet become seamen. As the Christian propaganda of Charlemagne swept towards the shores of the North and Baltic seas, the pagans were driven to the sea. They retaliated for the Christian persecutions with plundering raids and expeditions against the northern coast of France and against Christian England. These pagan Saxons and English of the mainland and their kindred from Denmark and Norway are the Danes and Northmen of our national histories. They were also called Vikings, which means inlet men, because they came from the deep inlets of the Scandinavian coast. They came in long black galleys, making little use of sails. Most of our information about these wars and invasions of the pagan Vikings is derived from Christian sources, and so we have abundant information of the massacres and atrocities of their raids, and very little about the cruelties inflicted upon their pagan brethren the Saxons at the hands of Charlemagne.